Well, hello and welcome to the Tim Maso podcast. We're back on track, and today I'm discussing the watches that impressed me most in 2021. Now, the year's not done, and I'm likely to see at least a few hundred additional watches through my office before the end of the calendar year. But I'm going to be bold, and I'm going to state that the ones that have impressed me most are probably going to remain at the head of the column. Watches that cost as little as $2,930 and as much as, well, about $400,000 have caught my eye this year, and I'm sticking to watches that I've seen firsthand. So while I haven't seen watches like the SB04, SB05 from Sartori Billard, and I haven't seen the Garrick S4, I have absolute confidence that they're wonderful watches, and they would have made my list had I seen them in person. So let's start with something that's fun, accessible, and universally appealing, the Zin U1. The thing about the Zin U1 is it is the Zin that you imagine when you think of a Zin dive watch. In fact, it's probably the watch you imagine when you think of a German dive watch. It's been on the market for quite a few years, almost two decades at this point, and the full tegumented version of the watch on the full Zin factory bracelet feels like it could anchor a battleship. I mean, it literally feels so solid, indestructible, redoubtable, and all of a piece that if you told me this was a $10,000 watch, I would have believed you. Now, of course, there's a lot to love about this watch, but the number one thing for me is the durability. And speaking to that durability, you've got a watch that has a surface hardness of about 1,500 Vickers. So when you hold it in the hand and you look at its rather, I would say, yellow-tinted, gray, media-blasted surface, you don't immediately pick up that what you're holding is about as hard as watchmaking ceramic. But I have an EZM 1.1. It's a watch I've worn exclusively for the last 4 years. And this watch has been hit by door handles, door frames, car seatbelt buckles. It once came in contact with a granite wall, and it doesn't have a mark on it. I can etch it, scratch it, savage it with a key, and show off to my friends just how indestructible Zin tegumented steel is. And while the UN has, or the U1, I should say, has not been available in tegument every year since it was launched in 2005, it is available in full tegument now. Full tegument bezel, case, and bracelet. The price you pay for the premium is definitely worth it. This is a timepiece that will look just as good 5, 10, even 15 or 20 years down the line because it never needs to be refinished. Is it possible to dent? Is it possible to put a mark on it? I suppose anything's possible. But in my experience, it's neither likely nor easy. If you hate scratches, swirls, if you hate and abhor the idea of refinishing a watch ever, if you shed a tear when you put the first nick in your high horology sports watch, go mainstream horology. Go with the Zin U1, $2,930, full tegument, full bracelet. This is a watch that is 44 millimeters in diameter, but wears smaller. It's fairly thin for what it is at 14.7 millimeters, and lug to lug, it's only 50.5. So again, this does wear like a smaller watch, more like a 41 or a 42. It's water resistant down to 1,000 meters, and the icing on the cake is that it is tegumented submarine steel. So whereas standard steel needs to be, for example, rinsed after exposure to salt or sweat, U-boat steel doesn't. This submarine steel is more resistant to corrosion to the point that it doesn't need to be rinsed like Rolex 904L steel. But unlike Rolex 904L steel, U-boat steel is about 350 to 400 Vickers. Remember, standard 316 or 904L, it's going to be 200 to 250. So U-boat steel is harder and more corrosion resistant before it gets carbon diffused and tegumented. Very appealing to me, highly recommended. The clasp even comes with a extensible dive clasp. And one of the coolest features is that the removable links in the bracelet are fixed by hex bolts. Okay, stepping up a little bit to something more expensive. Let's talk about the Chopard Alpine Eagle Cadence 8HF. The Alpine Eagle came out in 2019. And I think it was a bit of a misunderstood watch at first. It got slated, and I was a skeptic. It definitely seemed like a play on the popularity then of the Nautilus, which has only become more intense since then. But at $12,800, I couldn't really fault the Alpine Eagle because the value was undeniable. Manufacture movement, chronometer certification, beautifully manually finished externally. We're talking about the steel components of the case and bracelet. You know, an extended power reserve of 60 hours on the chronometer certified in-house movement, a bracelet that was fully sizable, really just very impressive as a product, and a 41 that wears true to size, looks great, and has a dial to die for with a lovely deep spiral graining. It looks almost like blue denim with its gradients and shadings of blue, but it has a wonderfully deep grooving that's far more dramatic and deeply ridged than a conventional metallic sunburst. That was a great watch. But this year, Chopard refined it again, and for $19,000, now you get the Alpine Eagle, same size, 41 millimeters, same power reserve, 60 hours, same chronometer certification, but it is now in grade 5 titanium, which is both lighter than steel and more scratch resistant. The dial, no longer blue, is now a lovely titanium gray to match the case. They've removed some of the anachronistic Roman numerals from the dial at 3, 6, and 9 o'clock, so the only numeral is now at 12 o'clock. The rest of the hours are indices. Not only does it look a lot more modern, but it has a fascinating high beat movement. The movement is 8 hertz, so if your standard watch, for example, beats at 8 beats per second, this one beats at 16 beats per second. So it goes from 4 hertz or 4 cycles per second now to 8 hertz. So 16 beats per second. It is a genuinely impressive machine. It has a different heartbeat to it. It has a different look. The escapement is now full silicon, unlubricated, which not only improves the friction of the escapement and helps to maintain a power reserve of 60 hours despite doubling the beat rate, but it also helps to extend the intervals between service. So for me, this watch at $19,000, which you can actually get in a dealer, represents a fantastic value. It's significantly less expensive than something like the Vacheron Constantin Overseas self-winding, which is $22,500, the $21,500 H. Moser & C. Streamliner Center Second. These are great values. And I have to say that compared even to the retail price of, I think, about $34,890 for a Nautilus, the Chopard Cadence 8HF from the Alpine Eagle line is technically cool, a good value, durable, versatile, and a watch you could easily make your only watch. It looks upscale enough to be your dress watch, but it's durable enough, loomed enough, automatic enough, water-resistant enough, scratch-resistant enough to be a sports watch that it was born to be. Now, we're taking a step up here. This is an old watch. It's not a new thing, but the Duomet chronograph from Jaeger-LeCoultre has a sibling known as the Quantième Lunaire. The Duomet, a Quantième Lunaire, is focused not on stopwatch functions, as the first Duomet was, but on chronometry. And the watch happens to have a pointer-style date, coaxial with a moon phase, so you get a little bit more for your money. It's not purely a chronometry-focused watch. The problem with so many Duomet models, in the initial form, it was a 42-millimeter watch that was very thick and very broad and wore more like a sports watch than a dress watch. Well, in 2012, they came out with a domed bezel and a smaller case, 40.5 millimeters, and in 2014, they came out with a version of that 40.5-millimeter case in white gold, 200 pieces limited edition, the Duomet A Quantième Lunaire Grand Faux. So white gold, 40.5 millimeters, Grand Faux enamel dial in white, cooked up to 20 times in a kiln, and fired at up to 800 degrees centigrade, artisanally created, and JLC, unlike most brands, makes their enamel dials in-house. So this watch is the right size. It's beautifully laid out. Unlike most of these Quantième Lunaire watches, it doesn't have a skeleton dial. So frankly, I think its style is going to age much better. It does still have the moon phase. It does still have the pointer date, which you can adjust with a pusher on the case length. But this watch brings you all of the Duomet watchmaking in a more attractive, artisanal, and wearable case. Flip it over. You still get caliber. a 381, which was the second Duomet caliber after the original chronograph, and it's gorgeous. It's made of German silver, like a Lange, which has a lovely golden hue, nickel-copper-zinc, with the copper being the element giving it that golden hue, and it's based off of an old JLC minute-repeating chronometer pocket watch from the 1880s. The idea of the Duomet is that, at least in the Acuntium Lunaire model, one barrel drives the escapement, and that's all it does. It maintains constant amplitude about the balance. Then the other barrel drives the date, the moon phase, the time indications. So you never lose balance amplitude despite the power-intensive complications, including the jump of the moon phase and the date. Even more impressive to me is that it has a cool zero-reset hacking system. So when you pull the crown out, the watch zero-resets both the center seconds hand and the foudroyant, 1/16 of a second flying seconds hand. So it resets both the flying second hand and the central second hand. But wait, there's more. Possibly the coolest feature of this zero reset hacking second system is that it doesn't stop the balance. Unlike almost every other watch I've ever encountered, where you stop the hands and you stop the balance, this particular JLC keeps the balance running at full amplitude and via a clutch re-engages the time and complications when you push the crown back in. As a result, it doesn't have to regain balance amplitude after you set the time. So a lot of watches require quite a bit of time, between 30 seconds and a minute, to completely regain balance amplitude, a time during which the watch will lose time, up to seconds per resetting. Well, that's not good on a chronometer. JLC's solution is brilliant. Hacking, zero reset, and no breaking of the balance. This is one of the most impressive aesthetic and technical accomplishments I've encountered, not just in 2021, but always. Okay, a watch that was new for 2020. We're talking now of a mainstream watch at a mainstream price, but one that is very difficult to obtain. The Rolex Oyster Perpetual 41 with green dial. Yes, it's a $5,900 watch. No, you're not going to buy it for anywhere near that number, as I've seen it selling for between $15,000 and $20,000, which is a bit much. But if you can look at it as a watch and not as a status symbol or a focus of watch flippers, it is a very impressive piece. It's got a nice broad and flat look to it. Oyster Perpetuals have always been fairly squat, thick for their width. This watch, though, at 41 millimeters, seems broad and flat and elegant in a way that no previous Oyster Perpetual, including the 39 millimeter, ever really looked. So while you need a bigger wrist for it, it looks great. Elegant in a way that I would compare favorably to something like a Datejust 41, a Date 840, or a Yachtmaster. Truly appealing now, 100 meters water resistant, anti-magnetic, shock resistant, well-loomed, the new 70-hour power reserve movement, and for the first time on an Oyster Perpetual, you get the EasyLink 5mm tool-free adjustment system. So some will prefer the Tiffany dial, many, it seems, prefer the Tiffany dial, because that appears to be the most expensive used version of this new watch. But I really like the red coral and the green dials, and I even like the yellow one. They're very lively, fun, friendly, approachable, and if you can get them at the Rolex retail price of $5,900, you will have done well. This is the best Oyster Perpetual yet. Okay, from the world of independent horology, we have the Ludovic Baloir Upside Down, a six-piece limited edition in platinum with lapis lazuli dial. This is a new version of master watchmaker Ludovic Baloir's original watch. He created this watch in 2009 after leaving F.P. Journe. Previously, he worked in service for Franck Muller before spending the better part of a decade with F.P. Journe, building mostly chiming watches, principally the Grand Sonnerie. Now, in 2009, he launched his own brand, Montre Ludovic Baloir. He works just outside the city of Geneva, in the canton of Geneva. He makes 12 watches a year entirely by hand, one watch a month. The six pieces of the Upside Down lapis lazuli are the Upside Down complication, whereby the current hour jumps upright. There are 12 numerals on the dial. All of them are upside down except the current hour. There's a minute hand at center, and then all of the hour numerals are upside down until they ratchet upright when they are in play. So, for example, when it's 12, 12 will go from being upside down to right side up, and then you read the minute hand radially. Well, The six-piece limited edition uses a lapis dial, and each disc bearing a numeral is itself lapis lazuli. The case is 41 millimeters in platinum. It wears flat, flush, and handsome, though not petite. It is fairly large for a dress watch. The timepiece is entirely handmade. When you flip it over, you realize what that really means. It means all of the figures, the numerals, and the letters in the case back are engraved by hand, not stamped, not laser etched, not drilled into place by a lathe. Very impressive stuff, and it looks visibly handmade. It's not easy to engrave platinum. This watch gives that to you. Now, the base movement is a manual wind with a 36-hour power reserve, and it uses a Maltese cross system to ratchet the current hour upright and keep the rest of them upside down. It's based on the train of the Pezzo 7001, which means it has a long history in Swiss watchmaking, but the execution, the finish, the complication, and the details of the watch are all Ludovic Balois. Now, he's also created the Halftime, which is a retrograde minute jumping hour watch that reassembles broken numerals as the hours pass, and he also created the Harry Winston Opus 13. So this is a very accomplished watchmaker. Still, this lapis dial limited edition platinum version of his original watch is, to me, the most appealing. It's not a cheap thing. It's about $103,500. Again, six pieces. That's about $10,000 more than a standard upside down in gold would be. But in my opinion, worth it on aesthetics alone. Okay, Grubel Forsey launched the Double Tourbillon 30 Degrees back at Baselworld in 2005. This was their first watch under their own name, Robert Grubel of France, Stephen Forsey of England. Previously, they'd worked for APRP. They had created a company called Completime that creates complicated watches and mechanisms for customers. But their first watch, and as they like to say, their first fundamental innovation as Grubel Forsey, was the Double Tourbillon 30 Degree. 43.5 millimeters. The model I saw was white gold. So what sets this watch apart is that it reclaims the chronometric intent of the tourbillon regulator as Abraham Louis Breguet originally envisioned it in the late 18th century and patented it in the early 19th century. The tourbillon in a pocket watch would always sit with its axis, that is, the axis through the balance, perpendicular to gravity. And that made sense. Rotating upright like a Ferris wheel in your breast pocket or your coat pocket, the tourbillon would cancel out the effects of gravity on a watch whose position was unchanging. The problem is a wristwatch moves into many positions and sits at many angles. And if you only have a tourbillon sitting on one axis or a balance sitting on one axis, there is no guarantee that it will counteract the effect of gravity on the balance and the hairspring. What Grubel and Forsey did was they created two tourbillons within one case. Their watch, which is manual wind and has a 72-hour power reserve despite not one but two tourbillon regulators, it has a 30-degree incline for the balance. So no matter what, the balance is always at an angle to gravity. It has a 60-second tourbillon inside a 4-minute tourbillon, with the result that that inclined balance at 30 degrees is rotating inside one tourbillon while the other tourbillon rotates around it, ensuring that the balance wheel will rotate through several different angles with respect to gravity every 1 to 4 minutes. So you wind up taking the balance on a wristwatch and ensuring that whatever angle it's at on your dresser at night, whatever angle it's at on your night table, whatever angle it might be on your wrist, the balance and the hairspring will be exposed to gravity from several different angles, much like they would have been in a pocket watch. And for me, that was the first fascination. Two tourbillon regulators in a single timepiece. But you come for the tourbillon, and with Grubel Forsey, you stay for the finish. And while it's a little bit of a cliche, I know, with Grubel, it really is co-equally the best in the world. There's some brands that come to mind: Philippe Dufour, Carrie Vuitelinen, Marco Long, Long und Heine, Chronometry Fernand Berthou, all of them are wonderful. Recep Recepi is wonderful. This is all great. But with Grubel Forsey, the consistency of their excellence is what sets them apart, because they've been doing this without exception since 2005. The Double Tourbillon 30 Degree features so much black polish, you can literally see your face and your watch front and back from several different angles. The tourbillon is spectacular. And this is cost no object. Overcoil hairsprings, free sprung regulators, black polished screws with chamfered slots and circumference, German silver bridges, frosting done the traditional way with a wire brush, anglage a mile wide, wheels that aren't just satinated on their top, that's common in the industry. They feature beveling inside their circumference and on their spokes, creating sharp interior angles where the spokes meet the rim of the wheel. All of this with jewels set in golden chaton, the way they would have been in the pocket watch era of watchmaking in Le Chaux de Fonds. Now, the best does not come cheap, and the prices have soared this year. There was a time this year when $200,000 to $250,000 would have bought this watch. In the second half of the year, prices exploded, partly due to the acknowledged importance of Grubel Forcy's first watch and the rarity of that first watch. Remember, Grubel Forcy today is making 120 to 150 watches a year, but in the early 2000s, the original double tourbillon 30 degree was built in much lower volumes. So if you have one of the early models, now that watch is going to be worth between $350,000 and $400,000. And I hate to say it seems appropriate, but in a world where an early F.P. Journe tourbillon is now a $1 to $2 million watch, if you're talking about a first-generation tourbillon Remontoir or one of the subscription series watches, one of the first 20, you're talking about a $1 million to $2 million watch. Well, the Grubel Forcy watch is technically and aesthetically better. It looks better. It's more audacious from a technical standpoint. And when I say it looks better, I mean it doesn't have the crudity that the first Journe watches have. Well, some people like the crudity of the first Journe watches. The fact is, Grubel Forcy didn't need to get up to speed. They were perfect from the beginning. And a breakthrough landmark watch, the first watch of a significant market-leading independent brand, should be more comparable in value to a Journe, an equivalent tourbillon Journe, than the double tourbillon is even now to an early Journe tourbillon Remontoir. I think even at $350,000 to $400,000, provided you've got the wrist for it, the double tourbillon 30 degree is still a better buy and a better watch, and it's more interesting to me. Okay, I saw a remarkable watch made in 57 pieces by Omega, and just looking at details of the movement, if you'd handed me the bridges and the plates without the Speedmaster case and dial, I would have told you this looks like the work of Vacheron, or this looks like the work of Kurt Schaffo, or this looks like the work of Armin Strom. And in fact, it is the work of Armin Strom. Armin Strom was a self-taught watchmaker, skeletonizer, and engraver who started practicing under his own name in the 1980s, but he also continued making watches for other brands into the 2000s. And in 2003, Omega commissioned Armin Strom, who is their neighbor in the city of Bienne. Back during his lifetime, he worked in Biel Bienne, the split-language Swiss city that is the headquarters of Omega, and they asked him to create 57 platinum, skeletonized and engraved Omega Speedmaster Moonphase watches. So the Speedmaster Moonphase is a Speedmaster professional. It is the Moonwatch Moonphase, featuring a radial date, a coaxial Moonphase, the Lamagna-based caliper. It has that Lamagna-based caliber with the date and the Moonphase added, and the chronograph function. It is the same movement the astronauts used, but it's got the complication, and in this iteration, it's got the goods. Fully skeletonized and engraved by Armin Strom, no two of these 57 pieces are identical. You're getting a truly artisanal masterpiece. And I do mean masterpiece because Armin Strom was that in his lifetime. But you're getting it from a brand that goes toe-to-toe with mainstream luxury brands like Grand Seiko, Breitling, and Rolex. You will not see a watch like this from Breitling and Rolex. It is surpassing. It is a handmade watch. It is something crafted on the scale that only an artisan can, working in a few pieces per month at his own pace in his own shop. This is what makes Omega different and more soulful than a lot of the other big group brands. They're willing to work with artisans. They're willing to release high horology watches. They're willing to release low volume watches for which there is no mass market marketing or profit model to be proposed. They're doing it because it's cool. They're doing it because there are people then and now in Omega who still prize stuff like this. And this Armin Strom skeletonized and engraved 57-piece platinum Moonwatch Moonphase was one of the coolest watches I saw this year. If you can get one, buy it now. There is no reason for a silver Snoopy, 1, 2, or 3, to be worth what those are currently worth. But this, which will never be made again with the death of Armin Strom, this is worth the $105,000 it's worth right now. Now, this watch previously was about a $50,000 to $55,000 watch, but at about $105,000, given its history, its rarity, and its significance, as well as, frankly, the beauty that you get to enjoy every day, it's skeletonized of dial and of movement, so all the action, the skeletonization, the engraving, it's on the dial side, it is worth it. It is a $100,000 watch. Hold it in your hand, you'll agree. That's why, to me, it is one of the most impressive watches that I encountered in the year 2021. Now, I also encountered a watch by a watchmaker who has an on-and-off history with watch production. Karsten Freisdorf is a German watchmaker who practices in Le Chaux-de-Fonds, and his business history has been a little bit rocky with companies like Heritage Watch, Chronoswiss, and Fabrication de Montre Normand, never quite getting off the ground. The Chronoswiss thing ended in recriminations, as did Heritage Watch and Fabrication de Montre Normand. That said, since 2018, working under his own name rather than working for others, Karsten Freisdorf has created some spectacular marine chronometer-inspired tourbillon watches, first with the Spirograph Tourbillon, then with the Spirograph Sport, now the watch I think he wanted to make from the beginning, which is the 8. It uses the same basic movement from the previous watches, but technically upgraded. It has a longer power reserve, now with twin mainspring barrels, and he boasts that for 66 hours, it has an 84-hour power reserve, but it has a stopworks at 66 hours of runtime. And Mr. Freisdorf has said that the watch will maintain constant timekeeping. It will not lose or gain any time for its 66 hours of operation. One of the reasons is the extraordinary tourbillon regulator he uses. Rather than a wheel, he uses a non-annular chronometer-style balance, which means the balance he uses has enormous masses. It is huge, of diameter and of height. It beats away at 18,000 vibrations per hour like a vintage navigation clock on a ship, and it has, again, about 10 times the mass, 6 to 10 times the mass of a standard tourbillon balance and cage combined. So as it operates, it has a loud and vocal heartbeat. Tourbillon regulators are noisy, but this one is exceptional. It's more like a clock than a watch. And I wore it for a week and got to enjoy it and experience it long term at Dubai Watch Week. And in my hotel room at night from about 20 feet away on the dresser, I could hear that watch. It wasn't annoying or grating. It was sort of a welcome constant companion, a reminder that that little machine was alive and had a personality and a voice all of its own. Now, by using that huge balance, as well as a double overcoil, he has a Grossman curve and a Phillips curve, both on a Straumann alloy hairspring. Again, he gets very consistent amplitude about his balance and an isochronous watch that can be precisely regulated to keep good time, just like the navigation clocks or marine chronometers that he restored early in his watchmaking career back in the 1980s. So what I find interesting is that not only is it an excellent timekeeper, but it is remarkably durable, being 5,000 G shock resistant, swimmable. It's rated to 50 meters, but they boast at Moltke KF that the watch could actually be taken down to 100 without consequence. And then because of the alloys used, especially in the hairspring, it's a Straumann alloy, the watch is 1,000 Gauss anti-magnetic, which is extraordinary for a tourbillon. We tend to speak of the delicacy and the vulnerability of tourbillon watches. This one is designed to be hit and hit hard. You can wear it every day. It is fully lumed, and for $100,000, when you buy this watch, you get full custom. The dial, the hands, the indices, the case size, the case material. Do you want lume on the balance and the tourbillon? Even that can be arranged. Do you want your name on it? Do you want engraving? Do you want custom dials? Not just the color, but the design. All of that is included standard for the $100,000 you pay for the watch. Right now, Karsten Freisdorf is making about 20 watches a year, and you can actually reach out to Montre KF, start a discussion, and inquire about these watches, which are backed by the most encompassing warranty I've ever heard of. 5 years warranty, But they want you to maintain and wear the watch. So if you send it back to them within the 5 years, they will service it for free and send it back to you with a renewed 5-year warranty. There is no statute of limitations or end cycle to this. As long as you keep sending the watch back within 5 years, they keep servicing it for free and sending it back with a new 5-year warranty. That is what every $100,000 watch should offer. And cheers to those guys for offering something that's not only very innovative, but very necessary in the world of high horology and boutique horology. Now, the most impressive watch I have encountered in 2020 just crossed my desk this week. A watch I had never seen in person, much less worn and reviewed. It is the De Beethoven DB16 Tourbillon Regulator. Let me explain. It is not a regulator dial in the sense that hours, minutes, and seconds are displayed separately. Rather, it is an extremely accurate chronometer-style watch in the tradition of the mother clocks that would be used in watchmaking studios to set watches and clocks coming through service after the service was complete. So this is a watch to rule them all, one watch to regulate others correctly, so to speak. It is in the shape of the original DB1 chronograph, the very first 2002 David Zanetta design for the very first De Beethoven watch. Zanetta was one of the two original founding partners along with watchmaker Denis Flageolet. And while Zanetta is gone, back in 2013, when the DB16 came out, there were already new case shapes. The DB28, 27, the DBS, the DB25. There were many more modern De Beethoven case shapes in 2013, but the DB16 is the successor to the DB15, which used the original DB1 case shape. So, for traditional reasons, to maintain the lineage of these perpetual calendars, they kept the look of the original early De Beethoven watches. Into that, they placed a movement, the 2509, that has deadbeat seconds, hacking seconds, a perpetual calendar, a 1,112-year spherical moon phase, a tourbillon regulator, a power reserve indicator, a retrograding age of the moon indicator, all of this with a 96-hour manual wind power reserve. Let's break this down. You could get it in white gold or red gold. I had both in my office, each one a 5-piece limited edition. Forehead slapping, mind-blowing stuff. The rarity alone is extraordinary and worthy of note, but it's the mechanism and how much of this watch is made in-house and artisanally. De Beethoven, like F.P. Journe, makes its own dials, cases, and movements. The case I've already explained, but the dial bears elaboration. Silver, satin, guilloche, there's a ring outboard, all the printing is in blue to add some color and warmth, but there's a toroidal donut-like ring surrounding a center dial with rosette or sunray-style guilloche, done on a rose lathe, manual, reductive, old-fashioned. De Beethoven does that in-house. But the rosette soleil pattern, that is, the billowing sunburst of the guilloche, radiates out from underneath the moon phase rather than from the center of the dial underneath the hands. The moon phase is a sphere, one half blued steel, one half white palladium. You adjust it, and again, you don't touch it again for 1,112 years. This is a patented system by De Beethoven. They also have the moon phase sitting on a piece of blued titanium that acts sort of as the cosmos with little gold stars. Below that, there's a leap year phase indicator. And then we have a perpetual calendar. We have the day and the month in apertures, and at the base of the dial, we have a pointer-style date. There is a quick set for the date and the month, and a stop seconds function for the deadbeat seconds hand, which sits at center. Deadbeat seconds is a rare thing to see on De Beethoven watches, and it's rare to see a center second De Beethoven watch, so the watch is extraordinary on that basis alone. There are very few hacking tourbillon regulators, which this one is, so it's notable for that reason, too. Turn it all over. The finishing is very traditional. While the movement is avant-garde in engineering, we have mirrored anglage, black polished screws, Côte de Beethoven, which are narrower, lighter, and more luminescent Côte de Genève. We have fired blue titanium forming a bridge over a hand-finished 14-karat gold escape wheel that, along with a second locking lever and anchor, operates as the mechanism for the deadbeat on the dial side. So you get this wonderful artisanal fired blue bridge sitting on top of a polished 14-karat gold escape wheel with a locking lever that indexes back and forth every second, powering the mechanism on the other side. Drop down to the tourbillon, it moves in 30-second circuits, so it makes two circuits every minute, twice the speed of a standard tourbillon. But wait, there's more. It beats away at an El Primero-like 36,000 vibrations per hour, which is 5 hertz, or 10 beats per second. So the watch has the loud deadbeat second 1 hertz heartbeat, but it also has a 5 hertz heartbeat, plus the sound of the tourbillon mechanism, which, as we mentioned before, is always a little bit louder than a standard escapement. The watch looks spectacular, sounds spectacular, all of this, and it's protected by at least 8 individual patents, making it unique in the world of high horology in that it is full of pure science and engineering innovations. It's not merely an aesthetic frontispiece. It is not merely a statement of artistic skill. It is not merely a watch that appeals on rarity. It is a watch that appeals to the intellect as well as the heart. And for about $325,000 to $350,000, it is expensive, but I think the value is honest and the watch is worthy of that price. So these have been the most impressive watches that I have encountered in the year 2021. Rest assured, I'm not done with my podcasts for the year. If something spectacular shows up, I may have to reassess and restate. But for now, these are the leading candidates. Guys, reach out to me at mondaymailbag@thewatchbox.com and let me know what podcasting topics you wish to hear. Time out, Tim out, and thanks for logging on.